Chinese president officially welcomes his Iranian counterpart to Prime Minister as Beijing and Tehran seek to strengthen bilateral ties. Russia rejects as unfounded allegations that it's plotting to destabilize Moldova. Also ahead, at least three people are killed and five others injured after a gunman opened fire on a university campus in the US state of Michigan. Welcome to World News from the reigning capital, Tehran. It's good to have you with us. Now, our top story, Iranian President Ibrahim Raisi has been officially welcomed after arriving in Beijing for a state visit aimed at building up bilateral ties. A short while ago, Raisi was received by his Chinese counterpart Xi Jinping in an official ceremony. The ceremony was held at the premises of China's National Congress. There, the national anthems of the two countries rang out before the delegations began their talks. Back in Tehran, Raisi had underlined that Iran is in step with China when it comes to countering unilateralism.
Both Iran and China are opposed to unilateralism and support political independence around the world. This shared stance has brought the two countries close enough that they can have good political and economic cooperation at regional and international levels.
Raisi said he would focus on the implementation of the 25-year strategic cooperation agreement signed with China 2 years ago. He said Tehran and Beijing already enjoy close relations, but there's still much room for expanding cooperation in different sectors, including trade and economy. The president said Iran's accession to the Shanghai Cooperation Organization has paved the way for closer ties with China. Earlier in our news review program, we discussed in depth the significance of the Iranian president's visit to China. Let's see what our guests had to say.
But I'd like to welcome my guest to this news review. Out of Tehran, Fuad Izzadi, academic and political analyst, and out of Kitchener, Ontario, Robert Fatina, author and journalist. Thank you both for being with us. Well, let's start this off in Tehran with Mr. Izzadi. Your perspective on the significance of this trip at this time?
You know, we are moving towards a multipolar world. China, it seems, is going to be one of the poles in the new world order. Iran has the potential to be a pole in the new world order. And the cooperation of these countries that are resisting U.S. hegemony, is quite important. It's beneficial for both sides. Iran is obviously under heavy sanctions from the United States, so having a close economic linkage with China is going to be good for Iran. And China is heavily dependent on energy resources of the Persian Gulf. And Iran is the only country that its foreign policy is not dictated from Washington. Other countries in this part of the world are heavily influenced by the United States. That's something that Chinese leaders understand. And so it's beneficial for them to make sure that they have good relations with Iran. It's a win-win situation. And I think in the next 3 days, we will see the benefits of this cooperation presented to the public and to the international observers.
Well, Robert Fatina, your take, it almost appears as if the United States is forcing more and more alliances because of the unilateral policies that it has, the sanctions, and all-out pressure on so many countries. Your assessment of the United States' moves that perhaps actually encourages and forces many of these type alliances?
Yes, certainly. Things like the sanctions against Iran, the aggressive rhetoric against China, these are have the opposite effect of what the United States wants them to have. When the United States sanctioned Iran, it hoped that the Iranian government would come back to the bargaining table. That didn't happen. Instead, Iran went elsewhere, in this case to China, to establish alliances. They'll be military, they'll be economical. They will be things that will benefit the people of Iran, which is what the Iranian government should do. So the U.S. is, in wanting to ostracize different countries, it's causing them to join together into alliances, which will help them become more powerful, will become more of a check to the United States, which is a very good thing, because the United States for so many decades has just operated around the world in a very destructive and very negative manner. It's estimated to have killed at least 20 million people since the end of World War II. And Iran and China, with their growing alliances, can act as a check to that, because the U.S. may be a little less willing to engage in some military misadventures anywhere in the world, knowing that it will be opposed to by this powerful new union. So the United States government, as usual, is not doing anything that benefits its own people or the people of the world. In fact, it acts to their detriment on a regular basis.
Okay, and on that note, I appreciate both of you being with me here on this news review of what is the academic and political analyst out of Tehran, Robert Fantina, author and journalist out of Ontario. Thanks you so much for being with us on this news review.
Now, a week after a powerful earthquake struck Syria and Turkey, the two countries are still overwhelmed by grief, but it is punctuated by rare moments of joy as rescuers pull out people alive from the rubble of collapsed buildings. In one of the latest such moments, a 10-year-old girl was rescued in Turkey's Kahramanmaraş province. There were similar heartwarming scenes in Hatay and Adıyaman provinces. Hopes, however, of finding many more survivors are quickly fading in cold temperatures. Such expectations are even lower across the border in war-torn Syria, which lacks the rescue and relief equipments. In the city of Aleppo, the UN aid chief said the rescue phase was coming to a close. The focus is now switching to shelter, food, and schooling. The death toll from the 7.8 magnitude quake last Monday and the massive tremor just hours later now stands at above 37,000. Nearly 32,000 of the fatalities have been confirmed in Turkey alone. Our Istanbul correspondent Rashan Saglam says there could be more people alive under the rubble, despite the hope for finding them are fading away 7 days after the catastrophe.
Actually, miracles are still happening, especially in the city of Adıyaman or the province of Adıyaman. A man and his son were rescued after 177 hours. A four-year-old boy was rescued after 178 hours, also after 177 hours. A young man, 35 years old, in Adıyaman was rescued. And in Antakya, a woman was rescued after 177 hours. So miracles are still happening. And the Turkish rescue teams are still continuing to search for people alive under the debris. They still have hope, especially with this weather. It is easier with the cold weather for people to stay alive more under the debris. Usually it is 7 days after an earthquake happens, but in hotter areas or hotter weathers. Now, due to the cold weather and sometimes due to the snow and rain, people under the debris, in a way or another, are finding it easier to breathe, to stay alive. And some of them said that they were drinking from the water coming inside to under the debris, to them under the debris from the snow that was falling. So this is a miracle coming from God.
The UN chief, meanwhile, says Syria has agreed to open two more border crossings to allow in aid into militant-held areas affected by last week's devastating earthquake. Antonio Guterres says the crossings will allow more and faster aid delivery from Turkey into northwestern Syria. Previously, the Bab al-Hawa crossing was the only conduit for the delivery of humanitarian aid into the region. Syria is concerned that the border crossings are used to supply Western arms to terrorists. On Monday, the UN Security Council held a closed-door meeting on the humanitarian situation in Syria following the quake. This is what the Syrian ambassador to the United Nations had to say to the reporters following the meeting.
During today's meeting, I conveyed to the Council that the Syrian government has repeatedly expressed its commitment to deliver humanitarian aid to Syrians, whatever they are on the Syrian soil. And I also affirmed that Northwest Syria is an integral part of Syrian lands, and that our people there are part of the Syrian people. And Syria will not accept that they be divided based on lines drawn by terrorist armed groups. Based on that, Syria supports the entry of humanitarian aid into the region through all possible cross points, whatever from inside Syria or across the borders, for the period of 3 months.
Earlier, the UN also warned that terrorists in control of northern Syria are hampering the delivery of aid by Damascus. More than 4 million people live in militant-controlled areas of northwestern Syria. UN experts are calling on the international community to stop Israel's systematic demolition of Palestinian homes and construction of settlements in the occupied West Bank. The experts said Israel should be held to account for the acts of, quote, domicide. They added that the regime's direct attacks on Palestinian homes, schools, livelihoods, and water sources is now threatening their very existence. The UN experts also expressed regret that Israel is committing human rights violations and potential war crimes with impunity. In January alone, the regime reportedly demolished over 130 Palestinian structures in the occupied West Bank. This figure represents a 135% increase compared to the same period in 2022. This, as the regime has been facilitating the expansion of settlements which are illegal under international law. Turning to other news now, Bahrain's top cleric Sheikh Isa Qasim says the anniversary marking the country's 2011 uprising is an occasion to spread the message of unity. The cleric said the Bahraini people need to amplify their efforts for change. He blasted the Al Khalifa regime for marginalizing the people. He also denounced the violation of the rights of political opponents and other dissenting voices held in Bahraini jails. He said some of those being freed from the prisons are either physically disabled or mentally tortured. Sheikh Qasim was addressing the Bahraini nation on the eve of the popular uprising that began in the kingdom on February 14, 2011. People in Bahrain have taken to the streets on a regular basis to demand social equality and the end of the monarchy. The Manama regime, however, responded to the demands with an iron fist, clamping down on any form of dissent. Russia has dismissed an allegation by Moldova that Moscow is plotting to destabilize the country. Russia's foreign ministry has censured the claims as completely unfounded. The ministry is blaming Ukraine for stirring tensions between Russia and Moldova. It has said Kiev is trying to draw Moldova into a tough confrontation with Russia. This comes after Moldovan President Maia Sandu accused Moscow of planning to use foreign saboteurs to bring down the country's leadership. She said Moscow seeks to prevent her country from joining the European Union and use it in the war in Ukraine. Next to the Belgian capital, Brussels, where NATO defense ministers have gathered for a meeting on Ukraine. There, the NATO chief has promised more support for Kiev after accusing Russia of preparing for new offensives.
We see no signs that President Putin is preparing for peace. What we see is the opposite. He is preparing for more war, for new offensives and new attacks. So it makes it just even more important that NATO allies and partners provide more support to Ukraine.
Stoltenberg also says the alliance should provide Ukraine with the weapons it needs to win the war. He says the allies are discussing delivery of aircraft to Ukraine. However, he says the top priority is to send more heavy weapons and other military equipment. This comes after Ukraine's president pleaded for combat planes during his recent European tour. Stoltenberg also accused Russia of planning a new major operation in Ukraine. Moscow has hit back, describing NATO as a hostile organization. The Kremlin says the alliance is making its involvement in Ukraine conflict ever clearer by its comments. At least three people are confirmed dead in yet another incident of gun violence in the United States. Five others have been hospitalized after the shooting at Michigan State University. Some of them are in life-threatening condition. The incident saw a gunman open fire at several sites inside the campus. He later shot himself dead. The university attack came nearly 14 months after a teenager killed four people at a high school in Oxford, Michigan. The U.S. has seen a surge in gun violence over the past years. Such incidents have killed 25 people since the beginning of the year. That brings an end to International Bulletin for this hour.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Insight. Welcome to Insight. On this episode, we will be discussing Iranian foreign policy with Deputy Foreign Minister Dr. Ali Bagheria Kani. But first, this brief analysis.
As we enter 2023, the rapidly emerging new multipolar world and the historic failure of the JCPOA process are two realities that are significantly affecting Iranian foreign policy. At the same time, Iran's ever-increasing hard and soft power, rooted in the efforts and jihad of its own population, are enhancing Iran's power and strategic options in this emerging new world. Even though international organizations such as the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, or BRICS, have existed for many years, it's the addition of the Islamic Republic of Iran to these organizations that many analysts consider to be an important sign of this new emerging multipolar world and the end of U.S. global hegemony. There was a time in the beginning of the 21st century when the US and Europe believed they could create regime change in countries like Iran and Russia, install strategically compliant governments in these countries, and in this way, neutralize these two Eurasian powers as potential rivals. But these attempts failed on numerous occasions, and we are now witnessing a world order emerging wherein Iran is joining international fora such as the Shanghai Cooperation Organization and BRICS, even after the failed JCPOA process proved that Western economic sanctions against Iran will never be lifted as agreed to by the US and EU, though Iran has complied fully with its commitments. The US will never allow countries such as Iran, Russia, or China to rise and develop peacefully unless they accept becoming its strategic and economic vessels. The world and Iran itself has changed significantly in recent years, making obsolete the assumptions of the late 20th century that Iran needs to have some sort of sanctions relief from the West in order to grow its economy. Iran is experiencing significant economic growth for the first time since the global COVID outbreak. It is selling millions of barrels of oil on a daily basis, and according to the IMF, is now the largest economy in West Asia, slightly larger in size than the Australian economy, ahead of Saudi Arabia, and twice as large as Turkey's economy based on GDP purchasing power parity. All this while still being sanctioned by the US and Europe to a greater degree than when the JCPOA process began so many years ago. The world will experience significant political, security, economic, and technological change in the decade ahead, and it will be characterized by America's desperate and violent attempts to maintain whatever it can of its rapidly declining hegemony. All of these factors will significantly affect all countries, including Iran. But unlike some other countries, Iran will use these new circumstances to increase its fundamental goal of maintaining strategic independence and continuously increasing its hard and soft power as it has in the last 40 plus years. Iran's most important power is its message and its manifest example of not being an oppressive power on the world stage and never accepting oppression from other powers. A message and power rooted in the Islam of the Ahlul Bayt, and something very appealing to all liberated human beings from all corners of the world. Iran's successful model of very significant independent social growth and development, while resisting US hegemony, serves as the model for many countries as they seek to find their place in the new emerging world order. A soft power that Iran attained through decades of sacrifice and jihad of its people. A power that very few others in the world can lay claim to.
Deputy Foreign Minister, Dr. Bagheri Kenny, thank you so much for joining us on Insight. I know your schedule is very busy. You've taken the time to come sit with us and talk about these issues. Thank you so much. And this is a good opportunity for us to discuss issues related to Iran's foreign policy. Of course, you're in the middle of all these events, so your analysis, your evaluations, your opinions are highly valued in this regard. Okay, Doctor, so very interesting, because we see that, I want to get to now a related subject, which is the idea that Iran always, since after the revolution, every administration that has come to power has always mentioned the relations that Iran has with its neighbors as one of the main focuses of its foreign policy. This is a basic principle of Iranian foreign policy, is to have good relations with all its neighbors. But of course, we see sometimes different administrations have acted on this in different ways. Add to this issue the idea that Iran's enemies are very sensitive about this issue, and they might sometimes engage in certain acts that will disrupt the relations, the good relations, the brotherly relations that might exist between Iran and some of its neighbors. If you could please give us some insight, let's go a little bit around the neighborhood. Give us a little insight into the foreign policy of Iran as it relates to its neighbors.
نگاه کنید از دو منظر برای دولت 13ام دولت جناب آقای رئیسی.
From two perspectives in the 13th administration, Mr. Raisi's administration, the issue of neighbors is particularly important. One direction of foreign policy is the look east policy, and second, it is in order to emphasize the internal elements of power. From both the perspectives of neighboring countries and regional countries, we are one of the few countries that have this number of neighbors, and this in itself shows a strong position of the Islamic Republic of Iran, and it means that the Islamic Republic of Iran is so large that it accommodates 15 neighbors next to itself. About Look East, I need to explain. Sometimes a fallacy is mentioned that when we chanted at the beginning of the revolution, neither Eastern nor Western, the Islamic Republic, this Look East means reconsidering that slogan. Look, the basic policy of the Islamic Republic of Iran is foreign policy, which is also on the entry sign of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, neither Eastern nor Western. This is a basic and theoretical look at foreign policy, and it means the basic principles of the foreign policy of the Islamic Republic of Iran is independence. Because the basic message of the Islamic Republic of Iran, if I were to say it in one word, is freedom. Freedom inside and freedom outside. Freedom abroad means freedom from the rule of foreigners, which is independence. For this reason, neither Eastern nor Western means not relying on foreigners. That means we don't rely on the East or the West. But this does not mean that we are disconnected from the whole world. After all, we live in an international environment and interact with the world. But because the infrastructure of our interactions was Western-based before the victory of the Islamic Revolution, the infrastructure of our economy, our industry, our university, many of the areas of our governance used to be based on the West. Westerners built it, supported it, or provided for it. And these interactions are based on that. In order to have a correct and interest-oriented view in our foreign policy, we need to look at the non-West as well. Look East means looking to the non-West. For this reason, neither Eastern nor Western means not relying on the East and not relying on the West. Look East means that while we interact with the whole world, including the West, we must also interact with the East. That is, the emphasis is on interaction with the East, and these are not in conflict with each other. They are also aligned. That is, they are complementary. For this point of view, the neighbors have a special place in the foreign policy of Mr. Raisi's administration. In fact, a lot of positive things have happened during the last year and a half. First of all, the process of resolving the dispute between the countries of the region and the Islamic Republic of Iran was followed seriously because there was a discussion in the past that was considered as the foreign policy of some administrations in Iran, de-escalation. We must distinguish between enemies and non-enemy countries, some of whom can be considered friends. We have de-escalation with our friendly countries, but we don't de-escalate with our enemies. What we have is threat reduction with our enemies. It means that we are trying to remove threats from our enemies' side, and this is different with our friends. For this reason, the general coverage of the foreign policy of the Islamic Republic of Iran towards the neighboring countries and the region is the issue of de-escalation, and as much as we can, we should try to resolve the differences between us by interacting with each other. Based on this, for years, between the Islamic Republic of Iran and countries like Tajikistan and Turkmenistan to our north, there were various discussions and disputes. Mr. Raisi's first trip, in the first month of his office, or even less, was to Tajikistan. And that visit cleared all the previous dust and differences, and we entered a new chapter. Sometime after that, he visited Turkmenistan. The same happened in Turkmenistan. In the south, a process had started some time ago to create a new round of interaction between Iran and Saudi Arabia. This issue was followed seriously by the Islamic Republic of Iran, and the process is still ongoing. We are seriously seeking constructive and synergistic interaction with all the southern countries of the Persian Gulf. In the case of Turkey and Iraq in the West, in the same way, our constructive interactions with Turkey in the economic and non-economic fields continue with seriousness. And in the near future, Mr. Raisi is going to visit Turkey in response to the visit of Mr. Erdogan. This year, we will have the visit of both presidents to the two countries in such a way that in these visits, the Supreme Council of Cooperation between the two countries is usually formed, which shows the will of Iran and Turkey to improve relations in all fields, especially in the economic field. The same is true for Iraq. The Islamic Republic of Iran, since the beginning of the formation of the new Iraq after the removal of Saddam's dictatorship, as an actor that has always tried to strengthen national unity, national sovereignty, and has been and will be a platform for the growth and development of an independent Iraq. And this has been proven in practice. In this framework, we have special economic interactions with Iraq, and these interactions have seriously expanded over the past year. Apart from the political interactions we have with Iraq regarding the regional role of Iraqis, both in the previous government and in Mr. al-Sudani's government. For this reason, Iran played the most effective role in the Baghdad II summit to consolidate the regional position and role of Iraq and the stability of Iraq. And in my opinion, it was a very important discussion. The same pattern is being followed in the East. We are dealing with Afghanistan, which is a set of crises and the roots of crises we have been witnessing, both the fields of the root crises and the crises themselves in this country for years. The issue of the lack of development in Afghanistan, the lack of security in Afghanistan, the issue of drug production and trafficking in Afghanistan, and one of the very, very important issues is the issue of terrorism and the presence of regional terrorist movements in Afghanistan. Next to these issues, a new government was formed. This government was faced with the non-recognition of the international community. We also emphasized, and still insist, that the government that's been formed in Afghanistan should be a government that is accepted by all the currents that are effective in this country, so that it can establish a stable government in Afghanistan. But in spite of this view of the current government of Afghanistan, we did not give up any effort to meet the basic needs, especially in the economic field, of the Afghan people during this period. We had serious interactions with the Afghan side, which would be the foundation of stability in Afghanistan, and could provide the basic economic and livelihood needs of the Afghan people and prevent the displacement of the Afghan people to other countries. Because after the establishment of the Taliban in Afghanistan, a significant number of Afghan people left the country, and a significant number of them settled in Iran. With Pakistan, despite the fact that we had a change of government during this year and a half, there have been and still are very serious interactions between the two sides. One of the serious shortcomings of our interactions with Pakistan is the lack of economic and commercial interactions between the two countries, which requires a serious effort from both sides and the cooperation of various institutions. We're making serious efforts to shape these interactions, both in the form of holding a joint commission and in the form of cooperation between different institutions in Iran and Pakistan. Based on this, the point that I can emphasize is that in any case, in the past year and a half, since the establishment of the 13th administration, we have witnessed various regional and international developments. But despite all these developments that affected our region, none of these developments could have a negative effect on the promotion of interaction and cooperation between Iran and these countries. It may be that the progress has slowed down in some areas and cases, but the path is the path forward. And I hope that in the coming months, we will witness the improvement of this cooperation and also observe the achievements of this cooperation, including in the economic field.
مشاهده دستاوردهای این همکاری‌ها از جمله در عرصه اقتصادی باشه.
Okay, doctor, we're coming to the end of our interview and our time. And, you know, as the deputy foreign minister, you are in charge of the JCPOA file currently. And we can continue and we can enter into this subject the way we usually do, which is we can enter it from a historic perspective. We saw that at the beginning of this process, the leader of the Islamic Revolution talked about, you know, this shall be an experience itself. So what I would like to ask you is, how would you evaluate the historic experience that Iran went through and is going through? We have different, as it relates to the JCPOA, we have different statements. We have President Biden talking about it being dead, but we can't announce it. We have the Europeans saying it's alive. We have certain commentators saying it's in a coma. There's different views on where it is. So if you could please tell us your analysis, your evaluation of the historical process that we've been through in the JCPOA.
One of the approaches of the Islamic Republic of Iran in foreign relations, which is also derived from our religious beliefs, is that we firmly believe that we must adhere to the covenants and agreements we make. And this is one of the new elements of the new order that we pioneer. While this order that the Americans proclaim, one of its features is that it does not honor its promises. Accordingly, they move as their interests dictate. Iran is not the only place where they behave this way. They acted this way in other cases as well. It means that nothing new happened on the part of the Americans regarding the JCPOA. For this reason, the view of the Islamic Republic of Iran was that the JCPOA is an agreement between Iran and several other countries. We adhere to our commitments within the framework of the agreement we made, and we expect them to adhere as well. Of course, we will not be indifferent to their non-compliance, but we will not disrupt this process. Experience has shown the same, that they, the Westerners, Washington, withdrew from the JCPOA. The Europeans did not show adherence to their commitments, but the Islamic Republic of Iran remained within the framework of the commitments it had given. But Iran used the capacity of the same commitments and halted some of its tasks it was responsible for. The important thing is that some people suggest that the two sides must return to the JCPOA. But the Islamic Republic of Iran does not need to return because it is in the JCPOA. The U.S. has pulled out of the JCPOA and must return. Even the nuclear measures we are taking now are exactly in line with the implementation of the JCPOA because it is specified in the JCPOA itself that if one side sees that the other side is not adhering to its obligations and has a fundamental lack of adherence to its obligations, Iran can halt part or all of its obligations. At the same time, the JCPOA is still effective. But as of now, we are the claimant, then the other side are the Americans. They are the ones who should show their commitment in practice if they want to return to the JCPOA, as they say, and show their commitment to the agreement. And the same goes for the Europeans. It is the Europeans who prove their non-adherence to our nation through various excuses during the period when the U.S. withdrew from the JCPOA. And this experience, as you mentioned, was a valuable experience for our people. In my opinion, this experience has several elements. One is that we should never trust the enemy. In my opinion, this is a basic principle in the foreign policy of the Islamic Republic of Iran. And this experience confirmed it, emphasized it, and established it. No trust in the enemy. The second point is not to rely on foreigners. Not at all. At one time, some people said that if this agreement is reached, such and such will happen, and they kept waiting for something to be done based on the agreement, while we should never rely on foreigners. We must use the capacities of the agreement, that is, we must move forward on our own path, and use the capacities that the agreement creates, but not shut down all other capacities waiting, so that the agreement itself would be an achievement for us. The agreement can create fields and bases if we make our own efforts, use different capacities, use our own capabilities. This can be helpful along with that. Therefore, in my opinion, Both not trusting the enemy and not relying on foreigners were important. Another point that I think was very important was that during this period, the Westerners, both Americans and Europeans, proved to the Iranian nation that if their illegitimate interests are involved, they will not adhere to anything, even humane matters. During this period, the sanctions were extended to the point that they targeted items that cannot be sanctioned even in international law. Humanitarian items, food, medicine, and medical equipment cannot be embargoed. It means that even in war, when you're fighting with the other side and you're killing him, you have no right to attack hospitals. You have no right to attack ambulances. While there may be a soldier in an ambulance who was fighting until 5 minutes ago, international regulations do not allow you to attack him in that ambulance. But in these embargoes, Western countries, especially Europeans, embargoed medicine, medical equipment, and food, even for special diseases that a number of children are unfortunately suffering from, which are genetic diseases. They refuse to provide us with these special medicines that were available to them just because of the embargo, while we could pay for them. This showed another face of Westerners for our people. This is not a human face. Those who claim to protect human rights and support human rights and sometimes perform ridiculous shows in support of human rights, here they are actually showing that, no, when their illegitimate interests are involved, even for a sick child who needs a bandage to heal their pain, they won't give it to them. We must know that there is a group called EB Home in Tehran, which deals with the condition of patients with epidermolysis bullosa, which is a type of skin disease. There are about 1,000 EB patients in Iran, and EB Home, which is a non-governmental organization, is responsible for handling their matters. They used to get special bandages for this skin disease from a European country that has the necessary standards for its production. When the American sanctions came, the Europeans complied. EB Home made a written request from them to provide these bandages to these sick children. They gave a written answer that they cannot give you these because of the sanctions. EB Home corresponded with its Turkish counterpart, requesting them to buy more bandages from the European country and send us the excess. When they made that request from that European country, they said that you have been receiving a certain amount until now. Why do you want more? Are you buying for another country like Iran? We cannot provide you with such items. Iran is sanctioned. I mean, this kind of view is really an experience. In my opinion, of course, it is a sad experience, but it was really an experience that Europeans do not care about the issue of human rights in any way. When the issue of their interests comes up, they sacrifice everything, not only human rights, but human beings. And they showed this in practice, because during this period, even a number of children suffering from special diseases, including EB, unfortunately died due to the lack of access to these drugs and medical equipment, as we, as the Islamic Republic of Iran, are claimant to these countries, and we consider them guilty and complicit in the killing of these innocent children.
Doctor, thank you so much for taking time for us. If there's anything left to say, please, we have a few minutes.
It's necessary to say, in order to complete the answer to your previous question, that on the subject of the sanctions lifting negotiations, which have continued in this administration from the very beginning and continue until now, is that the negotiations that are being carried out in the framework drawn up in the system of the Islamic Republic of Iran, based on the observance of its red lines, as well as meeting and providing the maximum interests of the Iranian nation. We entered these negotiations seriously right from the beginning, and now we're still serious in these negotiations. But as we have announced from the beginning, and the president has emphasized many times, and he is also paying special attention to the fact that the administration should emphasize that the fate of the country should not be tied to the fate of these negotiations, and the foreign policy of the 13th administration was not and is not based on negotiations. But negotiations are an important part of the administration's foreign policy, and we do not observe any procrastination or shortcoming in the path of negotiations by the administration seriously. The president has been personally following the issues of negotiations from the very beginning, and he still does. And he himself participates in some meetings, and they are organized in his presence. For this reason, the issue has been seriously pursued by the Islamic Republic of Iran and continues to be so. But the opposite party makes false excuses, as before, in pursuit of a series of goals beyond the negotiations. We have repeatedly announced that the Islamic Republic of Iran is ready to continue negotiations within the framework of the previous agreement, and we continue on this path. Now that I'm talking to you, we continue to interact with other parties, either through written messages or over the telephone, or sometimes through face-to-face negotiations. The process of negotiations has been divided into several parts, and it was the same before, but now it has become a bit more serious. And if each part has better conditions, that part will move forward. Since we have agreed not to release details to the media, I will not mention which sector is making more progress. But I can assure you that we are active in all three sectors in the field of negotiations. But some sectors have more tangible progress that we hope the synergy of the sectors together can bring a good and blessed end to the negotiations, and we will be able to conclude the negotiations in the foreseeable future. به همراه بیاره و ما در آینده در واقع قابل پیش بینی بتونیم به جنبندی مذاکرات دست پیدا کنیم.
دکتر باقرکنی, thank you so much for joining us on Insight.
I also thank you and your viewers.
So what insight did we gain from our conversation with Dr. Baghri Akani? Iran will inhabit a unique place in the emerging New World Order given its unique characteristics and its unique capabilities. Its homegrown power, both hard and soft, make it a significant actor in the emerging New World, capable of influencing events and punching above its weight to a much greater degree than some might want. With decades of sacrifice and jihad, Iranians showed that nations can have very significant independent social growth and development while resisting U.S. hegemony and economic war, and while maintaining sovereignty and strategic independence and their own cultural identity. Iran's message of not being an oppressor and not accepting oppression from anyone is a very attractive message for all liberated human beings from around the world. Human beings who experience the horrors of Western colonialism and imperialism, and who are now seeking to find their place in a new emerging post-US hegemonic world. As the US will seek to desperately and violently maintain what's left of its global hegemony, Iran's message and manifest example will inspire many nations to resist and to pursue national liberation and social growth beyond US hegemony. In many ways, the greatest barrier to the emergence of this new multipolar world are brainwashed elites, mostly in Europe, but also in other continents, and even some in Iran, who still believe it is the year 1995 and that nations cannot live and thrive without the US. A view that is now obsolete and even dangerous when we see how some European elites are sacrificing and destroying their own nations in order for the US to maintain its hegemony. Thank you for joining us on this episode. Until the next time, on Insight.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu Alaikum to you dear listeners of iRib English Radio Call of Islam page. Welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Mandegari. Stay tuned.
In today's world, people refer to plans rather than of those that Allah has decreed for them. For instance, they view a certain video on social platforms and they plan for their physical life fully based on that. Some want to go on a diet. Some want to be more beautiful. Some want to be more stylish and so on. However, most of them do not reach satisfaction. Why? Because the plans that are given to them are wrong. Another example is investing the money on certain companies for amassing more interest. Again, such people are going the wrong path. Allah invites the people to have trust on Him instead of others. This is because Allah is the sole creator of heavens and earth, and all the blessings are in His hands. Allah is the sole administrator of the affairs. Therefore, faithful people adjust their lives with the plans of Allah on earth to reach salvation, both in this world and the hereafter. Thank you very much, dear listeners of iRib English Radio Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Mandegari. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.